The symposium discussion then turned to adjuvant therapy, and to begin, Dr. Atif Hussain of Hollywood, Florida, presented a very unusual case of a 56-year-old postmenopausal woman with bilateral breast cancer.
Pathology showed the following. On the left side, she turned out to have a 7-millimeter invasive ductal carcinoma that is estrogen and progesterone positive, and HER2-neu 3+ and 3.8 by FISH testing. And all the nodes on the left side turned out to be negative. On the right side, she had 8-millimeter invasive ductal carcinoma. That one turned out to be triple negative. Unfortunately, a sentinel node on the right side could not be identified. She had bilateral mastectomies, and the nodes from the right breast and additional pathology were all negative. In short, this patient is a postmenopausal woman with a 7-millimeter invasive cancer, a triple positive on the left, and 8-millimeter node negative on the right, that's triple negative.
So we kind of, in one woman, combined two interesting questions. What specifically would you be thinking about treating this patient with in addition to hormonal therapy, which is kind of a given because one of the tumors was ER positive? George, can you discuss the case?
This, I think, is a fascinating case in a couple of different ways in terms of questions that can be raised. First, real simple question is, what's the prognosis of synchronous bilateral breast cancer? Now, when we say that we've got an 8-millimeter tumor on one side and a 7-millimeter tumor on the other side, does that mean we have a 15-millimeter tumor from a conceptual standpoint? A second question is, what's the prognosis of women with HER2-positive T1B node-negative breast cancer? A separate question, but one that we need to address from a therapeutic standpoint. And then finally, what risk-benefit ratio are we likely to see with chemotherapy and or trastuzumab in this population of patients? The prognosis of HER2-positive breast cancers that are less than a centimeter is, I would say, still quite poorly understood. We have a number of data sets, one from Norris that was presented at last year's San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium that was looking at all lymph node negative patients in terms of long-term breast cancer-specific survival. And if we look at all T1 tumors, there are a significant population of women who undergo recurrence and go on to die of breast cancer. But of course, we're not looking at all T1 tumors. We're looking at T1B tumors. Do we have a whole lot of data here? The answer is no. And in data presented last year by Black and colleagues, if we look at disease-free survival for women with HER2-positive tumors less than a centimeter, at 5 years, the disease-free survival is somewhere around 90%. Now, I say somewhere around because this is actually a fairly small study. The women with T1A and T1B tumors in this study only represented 74 patients. And this is pretty much the world's literature on this subject. So one has to take this with several grains of salt and say that there's fairly wide confidence intervals here, but say somewhere around a 10% chance of recurring at 5 years. And by the way, disease-free survival here is both local, regional, and distant recurrence of the disease. Now, on the toxicity side, I think the toxicity certainly that would concern us with a woman with a relatively smallish tumor, either unilateral or bilateral, who's HER2-positive, would be the risk of cardiotoxicity that's related to trastuzumab. And of course, certainly if we look at a summary of all cardiac toxicity that's been seen in these trials, women who receive anthracycline-based chemotherapy with trastuzumab certainly appear to have a somewhat higher risk of developing eventual cardiomyopathy. This is perhaps somewhere in the range of 3 to 4% overall. And I would suggest to you for a woman who has a 7-millimeter tumor that you'd be treating for her HER2-positive disease represents, I think, a legitimate concern in terms of risk-benefit trade-offs, particularly since we have zero clinical trial data in this population. So I think we're all over the map in terms of possibilities for a patient such as this: chemotherapy alone, chemotherapy plus trastuzumab. Take your pick of type of trastuzumab-based chemotherapy. Who knows? There's just simply no data. This will be looked at and is in the process of being looked at in a trial that is led out of Dana-Farber, which is looking in these low-risk HER2-positive patients, lymph node negative HER2 positive patients at the combination of paclitaxel and trastuzumab. This is a registry trial, not a randomization trial, so we won't have a definitive answer, but I think this will at least give us some sense of where we're going. So since we're in a data-free zone, I will give you my best guesses, okay? My best guess is that this woman's disease-free survival is probably somewhere in the range of 80 to 90% at 5 years. I suspect probably a little bit closer to 80% than to 90%, though I'm not sure I'd want to bet my house on it. Typically, of course, we've said on a national standard basis that women who have a 10% or greater risk of distant metastasis probably should receive some form of adjuvant chemotherapy. That's certainly been a standard for many years. So I would certainly say that adjuvant therapy is warranted for this patient. I think anthracycline-based therapy probably has some real risk. I would be concerned about the risk of cardiomyopathy in this patient. The NSABP actually has defined anyone my age or older as old from a cardiotoxicity standpoint, and since this patient is very close in age to me, she actually has a somewhat higher risk, probably than 3 to 4% of congestive cardiomyopathy with an anthracycline-based regimen. So based on this, I probably would use personally a TCH-based regimen a la BCRG-006. I'll also add as kind of a teaser, we don't have, again, a huge amount of data on this, but there's certainly some preclinical data to suggest that triple negative cancers and some emerging, albeit smallish, clinical data to suggest that DNA damaging agents may be a little bit better for triple negative breast cancers. So a platinating agent here actually may be a benefit on the triple negative side as well as on the HER2 positive side.
Joyce, what about this issue of platinums with triple negative? We kind of hear about it. Is there really much clinical data in terms of clinical responses?
There's little clinical data. I guess the study we can look at most is the single-agent study, preoperative, 28 patients with Dr. Judy Garber, and the pathologic complete response rate, which is 4 cycles of cisplatin at 75 per meter every 3 weeks, was 22%. Small numbers, but kind of an impressive PCR rate for a single agent. Then we're really just into subset analyses on other studies. In our gemcitabine carboplatin study, in both, we had 100 patients, 50 taxane naive, 50 taxane pretreated. The response rate in the overall population was about 30-35%, and it was the same in the triple negative population as well, and that's been submitted for publication. And then we brought the irinotecan carboplatin regimen to this meeting with or without cetuximab, and half of the patients were triple negative and half were ER positive. And cetuximab and carboplatin, again, in patients who 30% had had first-line metastatic chemotherapy, 70% had had adjuvant chemotherapy, was about 30% in the triple-negative population. So we have some data sets, but not that much.
I want to ask Cliff in a second how he would manage this patient, and also about the issue of AC paclitaxel trastuzumab dostense, AC nab-paclitaxel trastuzumab dostense. But first, let's see what happened to this patient and the decision that Dr. Hussain made.
I am going to give her TCH with Herceptin for 6 cycles, and then I will continue Herceptin for a year with an aromatase inhibitor.
Cliff, how do you think you would manage this patient, and what about this issue of dose dance?
So there are a couple of questions wrapped up in this. The first one is just on the question of this particular patient. Forgetting about the bilaterality for a moment, I'm very supportive of the Dana-Farber trial, and we're actually opening that trial, and I would be very comfortable with these very low-risk patients selecting something like low-dose weekly paclitaxel and trastuzumab. I think the operative question for the future for such low-risk patients will be whether they really need chemotherapy at all.
What about the triple-negative tumor? Would you be comfortable just with paclitaxel there?
Well, as a matter of fact, I would, and we're randomizing patients with low-risk breast cancer, 0 to 3 nodes in the cooperative group right now, 4 single-agent paclitaxel, 4 doses Q2 weeks versus 4 doses of AC, and having equipoise on that question allows me to say the same about that tumor. More broadly, let's imagine she had higher-risk disease and, in fact, was a candidate in most people's eyes for a standard trastuzumab-containing regimen. On the issue of dose-dense therapy, all I can say is that we have studied dose-dense AC and paclitaxel trastuzumab in the single-center, non-randomized fashion, and papers in press, I think, for February in the JCO. And the cardiac toxicity rate is well below what you would expect if the event rate was the nearly 10% that's been reported in the cooperative of group trials and elsewhere. And I will editorialize and say, I do suspect that some of that's about testing as opposed to real events. The asymptomatic EF declines that pull people off of trastuzumab when they've gotten AC are, I think, probably much less frequent at single centers with control technology. And I think this is a concern for us. I don't know how to fix it. But we essentially had one case of congestive heart failure in 70 patients and two more asymptomatic declines in EF that were late and did not prevent the administration of trastuzumab, as you'll see in the paper.
Can you talk about what you're reporting here in terms of dose dense AC paclitaxel NAB?
So that's a little bit different. In the HER2 normal population, we gave nab-paclitaxel with bevacizumab, like one of the components, in a sense, of E2104. And Maura Dickler and Tiffany Train and Heather MacArthur reported that, and it's got essentially acceptable cardiac toxicity below a threshold in a large cohort, nearly as large, actually, as the E2104. And we're currently following those patients still. They're not all finished the bevacizumab.
Interesting. Joe, what about this issue of the patient with a HER2-positive tumor, node-negative, under a sonometer? One of the most controversial questions right now. How do you think this through? Do you ever consider trastuzumab without chemo?
Yeah, I think it's a problem, and I agree. The focus is on, the first is to determine what the benefit is. And once you make that determination that there's enough potential benefit to pull the trigger on the trastuzumab, then the question is what chemotherapy regimen to use it with and try and estimate the benefit-risk ratio. And I've had personal circumstances where I've used the nomogram of the formula that the NSABP recently developed and found it to be helpful in terms of making some decisions regarding whether to use the anthracycline or not. I think another issue here is it really necessary to give a year of trastuzumab in someone like this? And certainly the data from the Finhurst study and from the E2198 study suggested a shorter duration may be just as effective. I don't think people would feel comfortable doing that right now or asking that question until we have data from the HERA study comparing 2 versus 1 year of therapy. And if that shows no difference, then I think it would be logical to investigate whether shorter durations of trastuzumab are just as effective.
Rowan, the triple negative subtype is attracting a lot of attention in terms of clinical research. But there has also been data coming out in terms of incidence in different populations, racially, geographically. Can you comment on that?
Yes. A few years ago, we published in JNCI looking at risk factors for breast cancer, and we interestingly found that African-American women, postmenopausal women, were about half the risk of developing receptor-positive cancers, but they really had about a 4 times greater hazard ratio of getting a triple-negative cancer, and Elisa Carrier certainly molecularly characterized those cancers as well. And so that is really an interesting phenomenon because they're at risk of worse prognosis cancers, which would, with the same screening, be found at more advanced stage because they're growing faster with the same therapy, would have a worse outcome. So it doesn't minimize the mandate to improve healthcare, you know, across the board, socioeconomically, racially, ethnically, but it provides probably a big explanation for the difference in outcome in that group.